Lannery jerked from a gentle doze, angry with herself for drifting off. That's not professional, she thought. That's not good. She climbed from the cockpit and went back to where Tree was looking down at Ironholks. The droid had wired a small mobile screen to the shattered comm unit, and now several lines of broken information glowed softly. Safe and sound? Lannery grinned at him. The screen showed 17 recent communications between the Stargazers and an unnamed recipient on Nox. Nox. Third planet of the system. It was also the most polluted, rich in mineral deposits, and now home to dozens of cities devoted entirely to manufacturing. 5 centuries before, the atmosphere had become so polluted that the cities were enclosed with giant domes, and ironically, the richest conurbation was now Keeve Crater, which manufactured dome components and charged a heavy premium to oversee their upkeep and maintenance. The air outside the domes was acidic and poisonous, and heavily corrosive to any craft exposed to it for too long. Skirmishes were not unknown between competing domed cities. During the Despot War, some had sided with the Despot Queen Haudia, and some with the Jedi, and a few with whomever paid the most. Many of those divisions still ran deep. Lannery had been to some dangerous places, but Nox might well be the most dangerous planet in the system.
Well, drop me off before you go, Tree said.
Sure, I'll open the door. Tree glared at her.
I mean it.
So do I. They have a head start on us already, and there's no telling what sort of ship they have. If Kara funds them, there's a good bet there's money from elsewhere, too.
It won't be some old space freighter they're riding to Nox.
If I land to...
I'm getting off this ship.
I'm getting off this planet. Lannery turned her back on Tree and slipped into the flight seat. Come up here and strap in, she said. No time to worry about niceties. The Peacemaker shuddered and roared as it escaped Calamar's gravity, and the cool embrace of cold, dead space had never been more welcome. Their time at Stav Kesh is the most intense period of learning Lannery has ever experienced, both psychologically and physically. She and Dale train hard all day. Meditation, combat, force movement. And in the evenings, they prepare food, clean the training classrooms and halls, wash clothes, and learn how to care for weapons. They also descend to the caves beneath the temple, places warmed by deep magma lakes. And here they tend the fruit and vegetable crops grown in vast hydroponic gardens. Food, cleaning, maintenance, water, clothing. No one is simply given things at Stav Kesh, and they have to work together to ensure the temple's smooth running. Dale seems to find some form of acceptance in their training. Lannery can still feel the turmoil of the force around him as he fights its influence, but for the most part, his childlike smile has returned. For a while, she starts to believe that he is almost at peace. Until the Darrow Sphere.
The Darrow Sphere is your next great test, Master Kin-Aid tells them one morning.
The Zabrak Master has taken over from Master Tave several times now, and Lannery likes her very much. Short, slight, her tattooed skin as dark as Bodhi Calf, she might be the most deadly person Lannery has ever met. Yet with that talent for combat comes an easy manner and a gentle balance, evident in her smooth movements and tranquil expression. Her relationship with the Force is as natural as breathing. Master Kin-Aid has taken them high up toward the top of Stav Kesh, close to the mountain's top. It is even colder up here than elsewhere, exposed to higher winds and with a thinner atmosphere. There is very little actual climbing to do, but the walk is long and energetic, and by the time they reach the small plateau at the mountain's top, they are all sweating. More accustomed now to the thin air at these altitudes, Lannery still feels lightheaded and adrift. The wind starts to freeze their sweat. Their thin training robes are ineffectual. None of them wants to be there, except Master Kin-Aid. She lowers the rucksack she has been carrying to the ground and turns to face them all.
No time for sightseeing, she says. Here, watch.
She upends the rucksack, and something falls from it. But it does not hit the ground. The sphere glows, hums, shines. It darts up past Kinnaid's horned head and hovers high up, drifting left and right as if looking at the views. It is the size of a human's head, and then larger, and then smaller again, fist-like, hard. It flits from place to place and glides. It is smooth and glimmers like a fluid, hard and spiked with countless protuberances. There are so many contradictions to the sphere. It is so ambiguous that when it attacks, it takes Lannery a few moments to figure out what is happening. By then, her leg is bleeding and her arm aches, and the other students are in disarray. The Darrow sphere attacks and then retreats, rises and falls, fires darts of light and impacts against flesh. One moment it seems intent on killing them all, the next it drifts away, glowing an almost serene shade of blue as it seems to contemplate the views. It sweeps toward Master Kinnaid, who performs an all-chaka move and kicks the sphere aside.
"Concentrate," Kinnaid says. "Don't panic. Don't get flustered. Let the force flow with you. Sense the sphere's movement. Know its intent."
Lannery tries. She calms her mind and breathes long and deep, remembering all that Master Tave has taught them. The force within her is perfectly balanced. She feels at one with it, neither master nor servant, but... The Darrow sphere sweeps behind her and delivers a paralyzing charge to her leg. She groans and tips to the ground, massaging the spasming muscle and angry at herself. She remains there for a while as the pain dissipates, watching the other students fall to the sphere. The Wookiee manages to get a hit in with one heavy fist, but perhaps the sphere let her, because she cries out as the hairs on her arms stand on end and her fist sparks and sizzles.
"Enough,"
Master Kinnaid says. She performs a graceful gesture with her hand, and the sphere sinks to the ground, fading until it is almost transparent. Lannery has the impression that it is still of its own mind, and that Kinnaid is barely controlling it at all.
"What is that thing?"